Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com, and you are listening to the Pickaxe Pundit Show on Nothing But Net Radio, part of the Dash Radio Network. We got a big show this week. We had quite a few games, a big homestand for the Nuggets, and I wanted to get into all three since we talked last week. So we want to get into that. I also want to talk about Emmanuel Mudiay and his play. And then tonight we've got the Orlando Magic in town. That game kicks off here in just a couple of hours. So if we get some time, we'll get a quick preview in of the Magic and what we might expect for tonight. So let me get to my co-hosts, also members of DenverStiffs.com. First, all the way out in Los Angeles, California, it is Mr. Mike Olson. Mike, what's up?
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I am doing well. Can't complain. You know, it's the weekend.
Yeah, exciting. It's a little downtime. Been some good times for the Nuggets. This was a good week.
Yeah, it absolutely was, which is nice. It's nice to have a good week so early in the season. Yeah. Also joining us, we go across the country tonight. We have Mr. Jeremy Poley all the way down in Philadelphia. Jeremy, what's going on, man?
Not much. Just here in freezing Philadelphia. But freezing. The fervor of the Philly fans is a fire.
Wow.
There you go.
That's alliterative.
That's the definition of a hot take.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. That is, man, that's the talent that we bring here on the Pickaxe Puttons right there.
Doing my thing.
Well done.
So, yeah. So, Jeremy, I guess stark contrast. Mike, you're probably sitting out there in what, probably like 75 degrees right now?
I mean, it's L.A., so, you know, how often are you going to miss if that's your guess? That's exactly where we're at. So.
I'm a safe gambler when it comes to the weather.
Well done.
All right. Well, tell you what, guys, let's get into it, man. So huge, as you alluded to, man, huge week for the Nuggets. Good week for the Nuggets. But last week when we were on the same time, of course, and the Nuggets had a game last Saturday as well against the defending champion Golden State Warriors. That is the one loss they had this week. They end up losing that game to Golden State, 127-108. Mike, how much can you take away from this game, or how much of it is, you know, it was the third game in four nights, it's the world champs, this is a schedule loss?
You know, I mean, I think you look at all of that, and it was a healthy loss. So it was at 20 points, 19 points, something like that.
Right.
They hung in there a lot. They definitely had some stretches where they played pretty well, but yeah, frankly, they were just outclassed. I mean, they were wiped out, and by the same token, you know, Golden State, my gosh, they're just clicking on every cylinder right now, and they know it, and they feel it, and they're having fun together, and it's great basketball to watch as long as they're not playing against your team, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, you bring up a good point there that they, I mean, the Nuggets, they did hang in for a while. I think, I mean, it was 60 to 55 at halftime. So they were only down by five at half, but then they came out in the third quarter.
Yeah. How many did Golden State put up? Like 40?
43.
I got it. 43. 43
points. So, yeah. Exactly, and then it was all she wrote. Jeremy, what do you think about that game? Do you also kind of agree that maybe the Nuggets? I mean, they played tough. They just kind of didn't have. They were just completely outmatched, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about. I think it was five games in seven nights that they'd played beforehand, which
right.
I think it's funny. That was Malone's post game comments. He was saying, you know, I'm not going to mention that we've played five games the past seven nights, but at first I was okay with it because we had such a strong second quarter, and it's like, yes, that's the Nuggets that we know. But to take a second look at it, I mean, really, that was our bench with Jokic that did such an awesome job in the second. And our starters just got blown away every time they stepped on the court. Their first string together, negative 11. Their second string together at the end of the second. They come in after the entire team is hot, and they go ice cold for negative 6 in just a few minutes. three right. minutes. And then they come out the second half, and it was way too much for Malone to even take, and he pulled him for the rest of the game all at once. So, we still – the teams that win in the playoffs are the ones who have that solid starting group. And we do still need to see that. I'm very happy with the way our bench can play and how Jokic can play with so many different people. But, you know, we do need to start seeing more out of our starters. And actually just recently this past week, other than that game, we've seen a good step forward.
Yeah. The other part of that was really hard was we'd had three or four games before that where our third quarters were just – we were killing everybody we were playing against when we came out in the third quarter. And so we'd had probably three or four games where that third quarter was so pro-Nuggets that just watching us fold up like a bad card table, man, was just – that was one ugly night. The rest has been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it was it was kind of like it got to a point, too, where I think with Coach Malone – because he said he didn't like the look in their eyes, I believe was his quote there at the end of the game when he was talking about that hockey shift, mm-hmm. if you will, when he took the entire starters out. I wonder, though, if it simply was because you're right, too. He kind of kept slyly mentioning about how they played five games in seven nights. I wonder if he kind of said, all right, you know, we just don't have it, because there was times where the Nuggets were really still putting in the effort, and making specifically on defense, still making their rotations. But, you know, the Warriors are just so great with their ball movement. And then they have the greatest shooters in the world. That it doesn't really – effort's only going to get you so far. I mean, these guys are just going to score points. And I think Coach kind of – you know, I kind of – he realized early on, he said, all right, this one is done. And then he just went to the bench. And I wouldn't read into it, I guess, as much that he was all that upset with the starters that they – he just kind of was like, all right, this game is over. Let's move on, though, because you know what that – That was really the only down part of the entire week. Next up, the next game, the Nuggets, of course, they played, I believe it was Tuesday. They played against the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets were in town. Nikola Jokic goes for a new career high, 41 points. It's funny, everybody. If you were listening to anybody who was talking about daily or who does like daily fantasy, which is not me. I have a fantasy basketball team that I never update.
But yeah, you do.
Jeremy knows, right? How you doing there?
Probably not good. I should check on it. But everybody was saying, hey, you should be playing Jokic tonight because he always is gonna have a big game against the Nets, especially because I think it's because, you know, Timofey Mozgov is as much as I love Mozzie. That type of center, that slow, mm-hmm. Kind of just not like a goon, but just a stiff, really, in the sense of the word, just a stiff. But you know, he's a guy who doesn't have the type of skills that are going to give Jokic any trouble. Jokic is going to feast on a guy like that, and he does. He ends up having 41 points. Jeremy, what did you think was the most impressive part about Jokic's night against the Nets?
So because we've learned to not expect this on a nightly basis from Jokic, but, you know, we've seen him hit 40. We've seen him throw up a lot of points. That didn't impress me as much as his chemistry with Millsap that night. That's yeah. kind of, you know, one of the big question right. marks for our team this season. And Millsap shot, it might have even been his most efficient night the entire season. He 63%. He got 17 points. And he was the same defensive monster. And he was yielding to Jokic in this game. He was taking right. the easy shots for himself, which is great to see. But he was giving the ball to Jokic to facilitate. And it hit this perfect chemistry. Granted, not a lot of opposition. As you brought out, Mozgov is not the guy that you know, the big mountain that you say you climbed. But we got to see the unity behind these two. And Jokic getting 41 and Millsap getting his, and us blowing the team out of the water is exactly what we want to see.
Yeah, exactly. It was just an impressive night all around. You know, the main thing, one thing I really noticed that Jokic, it was – was doing in that game was, I mean, he was aggressive, right? He shot a lot of balls from the top of the key, mm-hmm. or from the 3-point range. I think he ended up shooting 9 3-pointers. I mean, how often does Jokic shoot 9 3-pointers? Mike, how much did you notice about the aggression, and how good is that for the Nuggets if Jokic is having that aggressive type play where he's shooting 25 shots in a game?
You know, my favorite thing about Jokic, and this is, I mean, after almost every game, he goes down this road somehow, and especially when they're successful, is, and Jeremy already brought it up, you know, talking about the easy play, the simple shot. You know, Jokic talks about that all the time, and I do think that's probably the 17 easiest points Paul Millsap ever scored in a game. I mean, it was right. Everything he took was just there and wide open, and so I love the fact that, you know, Jokic talked about even that night, you know, they talked about you were really aggressive tonight. And he said, well, it was working and I was feeling it, right? And right, so yep. He doesn't think of it in terms of, I got to put up this many shots every night. He thinks of it more in terms of, well, they gave me this and I was feeling it and I could put the ball down anyways. So I'm going to take advantage of this crack in their armor. And if they don't give him that, or if his shot's not falling, He's got 20 other tools that he can roll to make sure that he makes a positive difference in the game and still does the right things in the right way. And so, you know, your original question of, you know, what's the most impressive part of the 41 points when you ask it is everything else. You know, it was his high scoring game ever, and still it was much more impressive how he was able to he got Millsap those 17 points, and there were a couple of his usual, you know, thread the needle passes during that game and things like that, right. That the fact that it was 12 boards, right? Five assists that night. Do I remember those numbers right?
Correct.
You know, that on top of 41 points and doing everything for everybody, he was the reason it worked, and everything but the 41 points was what blew me away. Just incredible.
Yeah. He, you're right. Cause he's still like, he fills up the box score, in more ways than just scoring. When he does that as well, it brings the Nuggets to another level. But you're right, because he mentioned that after the game. You know, he said that, hey, you know, I was feeling it tonight. And what was interesting is I think he missed like his first couple shots, and then he started knocking them down, and he just got rolling and just kept shooting it. So maybe hopefully it's a sign that, you know, that he's not, if he misses those first couple, you know, he's not going to get tentative as we've seen him in the past. What could you say about that night? It was kind of funny that the crowd was chanting MVP for him, which he laughed about.
Yeah, he loved it. He thought that was hilarious. But he reminds me of, I mean, his mindset reminds me of, please don't ever test me on this, because since I was a little kid, I haven't tried it, but learning martial arts when you're young, one of the first things they teach you is basically how to use whatever is being used against you against the other person, right? And just take whatever you're given and turn it back around into something negative for them. And that's really, that seems like Jokic's mindset all the time, is what are they giving me and how do I exploit it? And that's a great way to win basketball games, so...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and he's it also shows that, like, he's not a fluke, right? Like, he's adjusting to how they're adjusting to him, and he's still finding ways to be effective. I just really thought it was cool, though. You know, it just was a cool moment for Jokic, because and for Denver, really, because it's like finally you have this guy who the fans can get behind and who the fans can believe in. And I mean, we haven't heard MVP chants in Denver for a Nugget, at least, in quite some time. So it was a cool moment. It was really cool to see, even though it was a somewhat sparse crowd on Tuesday night.
I'm also glad it happened this early in the season, because it has been a bit of a bumpy road. It's a reminder that Jokic can do this, you know, I'm not going to say whenever he wants, but if he wants to take over and just throw points up, he has that ability to do so. And they're just all trying to learn how to play together. He's not trying to worry about that. And so it's great at this point in time, as a fan, as even a teammate, to remind yourself that, yes, we do have a lot here, but let's not throw everything away just to get points for Jokic. Let's try and come together and become a better team.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well said.
And, you know, the other thing about it too, when it comes to him lighting it up is he shoots such an efficient shooting percentage. He's actually shooting. He's still just barely hanging on to the 50-40-90 shooting percentages. He's just barely at 90% on his free throws. But a guy like that, I mean, if as long as he can shoot with that type of efficiency, he's always going to be able to score. All right, let's get into the final last game here to recap, at least, which was the Thunder, man. Talk about a big game. So I think this is the first game of the year that the Nuggets were on TNT, and it kind of had that feel. Especially, I didn't go to this game. I'm too old, is what it comes down to, and it was way too late of a start for me. But the Nuggets, at least from the TV perspective, it had that feel almost like a playoff game, because you know you have Kevin Harlan and you have Reggie Miller mispronouncing Jokic's name, but it's giving you good 11. Yep. But it really kind of gave you that feel and that excitement of playoff basketball, even though we're still so early in the year. And then the Nuggets come out and they win. I mean, they beat Oklahoma City, who has been probably their biggest nemesis, I would say, at least since the Melo era ended. Because if you think about it, right when the Melo era ended, it was the Thunder who knocked the Nuggets out of the playoffs that year, and have basically owned the Northwest Division ever since.
Knocked us out last year. I mean, they've always kind of not only had our number, but you know, it's a division game, and they're right up the road, and they're also those, you know, competing for fans in their small spaces type of a team. So yeah, they're always tough games. They always come to play, and it was fun. It was fun to watch.
Right. Well, and you got Russell Westbrook, who's one of the most exciting players in the NBA to watch for sure. Mike, what did you would you call this a statement win? Is it too early to say something like that? Because like I said, the Thunder are kind of basically been the cream of the crop of the Northwest Division for almost nearly a decade now.
You know, from the perspective of, I mean, what we were just talking about, from the perspective of a win against a team in your division, who you know is going to matter, who's got three all-stars on the team and last year's MVP on the team, and especially given the fact that, you know, there's very little doubt that Westbrook has been on a bit of a campaign to try to knock Jokic down a peg here and there, right, in some of the games, right? From all of those perspectives, this is absolutely a statement game. The only way I'd say maybe not is the Thunder are obviously, at least yet, they haven't worked it out just yet. And so they are obviously not the team that everybody expected them to be just yet. And their record, right, reflects it just now. And they are three guys trying to figure out what Jokic and Millsap were trying to figure out those first four or five games of the season, and may still stumble on occasion. And trying to do that with those three guys just hasn't quite clicked. I hope it does as a basketball fan. I hope it doesn't as a Nuggets fan, and we'll see where that all goes.
Right. Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because we see this a lot. We saw this with the Heat when Chris Bosh and LeBron James went down there with Dwayne Wade. We saw it a bit with the Cavaliers when LeBron went there. And we're seeing it now with the Thunder as just as well as, like, you kind of even with the Warriors as well. We saw that last year. So there's something that I think that makes it almost like not a statement win in my mind, because the Thunder are still trying to figure this out, like you're saying, and I think they will, and I think they've got all that talent that you were talking about, so that they will. If you beat this team, you know, a couple months down the road, then it's probably going to be a statement game. But right now, they're still kind of figuring it out, which makes it not quite there for me. Plus, we're like, what? I mean, we're 12 games in, so it's a little bit hard to be saying anything's a statement right now. Jeremy, what about you? I mean, how big is this win in your mind for the Nuggets?
Well, I mean, because it's November, I can't call it a statement game. That's not the time when you make a statement. It would be like making a statement to an empty room. There's nobody there to be, you know, claiming the throne or anything like that.
Well, wait, hold on. I would say that there'd be like those three guys, you know, in the back doing a podcast. In the room.
Yeah, that's perfect.
But I mean, for starters, as far as statements go, Mike brought it up about this this weird little Westbrook-Jokic thing. I thought that was an unbelievable foul in the preseason game that Westbrook put on him. One of the most ridiculous fouls I've seen in a long time. And Jokic was a dog in this game. I loved watching that. You know, his stats weren't anything to truly love or to highlight, but just watching him and what he was doing. You know, this is a team studded with all-stars that he's up against. And here he is. He's a kid still. And he put an elbow into Westbrook's face early on in the game. Yeah. It did look somewhat unintentional, but that's just how he was playing. He didn't care who was there. He was fighting through everything. In the paint, he was going to town on Melo. It was a blast. I saw it early on. And go ahead.
No, I'm laughing. Okay. I loved it. It was awesome.
Yeah, and it just kept going the whole game. And Melo would like look over at the refs like, what's like, come on, give me something here. And and Jokic really was being ridiculous. And you know, maybe that was actually took away from the overall performance that Jokic could have done. But to see that as a fan at a team that has all these passive personalities and like Mike said with martial arts, you know, just holding back and just using other people's things. You know, sometimes you just want to see a bulldog get in there and take care of business. And that's right. What you want to get behind. And to me, I saw a bit more of that in Jokic. So I was happy to see it. And maybe another statement might be, you know, the concept of bringing in a bunch of good basketball players from different places and expecting it to work really great. That might be the statement there with the Thunder this season. It'll be interesting because it's not over yet. They have way too much. They have way too much talent to keep up with this low of a record. But I'm not sure they're ever going to figure it out. And so when we as fans of the Nuggets go, you know, why don't we'll just grab Kevin Love from here and we'll grab Eric Bledsoe from here and then we'll be this great basketball team. You know, it's just, you know, not to deny these guys talent, but to expect everything to come together.
It's a different animal.
Yeah. Just a tale of caution.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said.
Right. And the funny thing about the Thunder is they're just running a lot of, you know, a lot of different like isolation plays right now. It's like a lot of, it's almost like they're just taking turns, you know, it's like, all right, now it's Melo's turn. Okay. Now it's Russ's turn. Okay. Now it's George's turn, and we'll just keep rotating in and out.
So a weird tangent here, but name a basketball team for me that Carmelo Anthony has played on that doesn't devolve into iso ball.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't even go back to college.
Exactly.
Yeah. College was the only time it ever worked, but that's because
there you go.
he was far and away better than any other player out there. Back in those times. All right, tell you what, let's go ahead. We'll hit a break, and then when we get back, I want to keep on this Thunder game, but then I want to talk about Emmanuel Mudiay specifically because he had a huge game against Oklahoma City and was definitely the player of the game. And then if we get some time, let's get a little bit into the Orlando Magic because they are in town tonight to finish up this homestand for the Nuggets. So we will take a break and we will be right back.
We've all been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You are listening to nothing but net radio on the Dash Radio Network. We have Mr. Mike Olson from Los Angeles, Mr. Jeremy Poley from Philadelphia here with us today. We spent the first half of the show talking, kind of just recapping the week and the three games that the Nuggets played. And I want to get right back into where we left off, which was with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Nuggets, of course, getting that win, 102-94. The best player in that game for Denver, hands down, was Emmanuel Mudiay. Mudiay ends up playing 30 minutes. He shoots 8 of 10. I think he went 7 of 7. He might have gone 7 of 7 or 8 of 8 to open up the game. He was 4 from 4 from three. He gets 21 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. He did have 3 turnovers, which is obviously something you still want Mudiay to button up. But otherwise, had a great game. His best game of the season, easily, and really one of his best games as a pro. Jeremy, let me ask you this about Emmanuel Mudiay. There was a lot of rumors that he was going to get traded or that he was part of a package that the Nuggets were proposing for Eric Bledsoe. How are you relieved? Do you think they still should have tried to make that deal happen? How do you feel now that Mudiay is playing the way he is about them not getting Bledsoe?
Yeah, first of all, let me say, imagining Bledsoe on this team I would have loved to have seen that. I really would have. We've gotten clearly a strength from Millsap on defense, and our perimeter defense is where we're seeing some lacking. And seeing Bledsoe out there eating people up would have been nice. It would have been really fun to see. But when you take a step back, and I'm only doing this because I'm trying to read into what Tim Connelly is doing, and trying to get on his page so that I'm not so upset from the outside. And to me, we're looking at the picture down the line. We're looking at what's the best way to build a team around Jokic. And part of that has to do with his age and the level that he's at and what he's surrounded by when he gets there to his, his zenith. And so I understand holding on to some assets, for the next few years, to us, we go from next year with the roster we have right now, there'll be $110 million on it, to the year after that, dropping all the way to $31 million. It's, to me, there's going to be no off season or year that makes up the future of the Nuggets. This dynasty whatever we can get from Jokic than that year. And so I understand wanting Moutier at that point on your roster rather than Eric Bledsoe, who is coming at the end of his contract, a free agent, who at that point would be 30 years old. So, you know, I at first I was just even with it. I would have been fine either way. But the way Moutier's been playing, you know, the past few weeks here, I'm slightly leaning towards it. You know, things are right. Looking a little bit better for him. So,
right. It could, then now he could be awful the next 5 days.
Right.
Like, should have traded for Eric Bledsoe. But, no, you know, the thing that Tim Connelly has consistently said is that he said you don't want to skip steps. Like, he's always acknowledged that the Nuggets were rebuilding when he first came in here. And he's always talked about how it's a process. It's kind of in the spirit of Sam Hinkie, mm-hmm. with trusting his process. That's instead he didn't say trust the process. He said his saying should be you can't skip steps. But so in almost with the Bledsoe trade, it almost to me felt like that would have been skipping a step, because the thing about Emmanuel Moutier is I mean, we talked about it so many times, right? He was 19 when he came into the league. He played like a dozen games in China. They made him the starting point guard right out of the gate and basically tried to make him the face of the franchise right off the gate. And it was just too much for him. And it's like it takes time for a player to develop, especially at the point guard position. I mean, look at what's happening with Lonzo Ball right now with the Lakers. Like, the point guard is still the hardest position to play in on the basketball court. And so it's especially hard when you're a 19-year-old kid or even at Moody's age, now 21. So Bledsoe would have been better than Emmanuel Moutier or Jamal Murray. Right now there's like, I don't think anybody would argue that's not the case, but Bledsoe and Millsap and Jokic probably don't get you any closer to the finals right now than Moutier and Murray and Millsap and Jokic do.
I might disagree with that.
I mean, it might get you closer. Does it get you where you want to be? And I think those are the differences, right?
Right.
I mean,
we'll never know now, but that's the big question.
Let me ask you this: Do you think Bledsoe, if you make the trade that the Nuggets had been rumored to do, the Fareed and Moutier, and like a protected first round pick, for Eric Bledsoe, does that team with Bledsoe now in the fold and Murray back on the bench, is that team still a top four seed in the West? Like, I don't know that they are.
I think it gets you in that conversation.
Right.
I mean, look at what Oklahoma City is doing now. Everybody was counting them as a top three or four. Minnesota
But look what Minnesota's doing, right?
Right, exactly. But that's exactly, I think, who we could be and maybe even better than. If with Bledsoe in the lineup, so all
I'm
of a sudden
not even sure it's about. Sorry, go. Sorry, my bad.
I'm just saying. So now, to me, all of a sudden, we are in that conversation of four seed, you know, something like that.
If somewhere like 4-6, right? Is basically where right now. Maybe right now, I think we're in 6-8, 6-9 kind of conversation. Maybe I guess with Bledsoe, you're at 4-6, but. At best, what's that going to get you? A second round exit? I mean, you're probably going to end up playing either a team like Houston or Golden State in the second round, and you're not likely to beat either one of those teams, I think. So that's kind of like my point. Like, it might get you one more round of the playoffs for a guy like Bledsoe. Whereas a guy like Moutier, if he continues to improve, I mean, the guy oozes talent, and he's got size. He's got all the things that you want in a prospect. You know, he could be a serious part of this core for a long time still. So, I guess that's why I feel like it's kind of like skipping a step.
And I think weirdly, just from slightly different angles, you know, we're all on the same page. I think from my perspective, you know, Bledsoe coming in this year probably does it elevates your odds of getting further up the ladder is all, right? And that doesn't necessarily even need to be a 4-6 or 6-8 range or any of that. He probably increases your odds of just getting through the door. And that's all more I need to know on that from him in that moment. But I totally agree with the longer term piece that both of you were talking about from the perspective of, it'll be nice to get back in the playoffs as the Nuggets. And if we don't yet again this year, that'll really be a bummer. And it'll make you think, wow, it would have been cool to have at least had Bledsoe to have made it that one step further. But then he introduces, issues both from a contract perspective, from a long-term perspective. This is somebody who has a couple of times been unhappy situationally in a role, and that ends up biting a team on the butt from a few different possibilities. And as much as anything, did you just try to reward something a little too soon as opposed to waiting this out and seeing what it is? I mean, Moutier, whether Moutier sticks with us long term or not, he has certainly now started to show himself in a way that he's an attractive prospect, and not only for us, but now, if push comes to shove on something, he's also a really excellent trade chip. And so I just love seeing what he's doing now, both because he seems like a great kid, and you're absolutely right, man. 19 years old when he came in the face of the franchise, and if somebody had like laid the fate of a fast food restaurant on my shoulders at 19, I'd have just totally, crumbled under the pressure, and that wouldn't have been with it televised in front of a city and state, right? So, he's responded well to everything that's going on, more than anything, with all of the ups and downs that he's faced. And of course, he's seeing what everybody's saying along the way, that he's not worth it, he should be gone, all this other stuff. He still stepped up in a big game a couple nights ago and hung up 21 points. And I'm trying to find ESPN right now because there was a stat on there I saw earlier today. Here it is. Two players this season, 21 points in a game with 10 or fewer shots, and he's the only guy who's ever done it for the Nuggets since they came into the NBA. And that's a good night, man. That's an efficient, good, solid night. And I'm glad they stuck with him. I'm glad that, because we were talking the last time the three of us were together, we were talking about, will he even be around or, buried way down on the bench, because it looked like, this wasn't the point guard rotation we were going to. And so kudos to the Nuggets. They seem to be figuring a lot of this out along the way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's still way early. And there's still a lot of time before we can probably consider this. Okay. Emmanuel Moutier is demonstrably better than he has been this year, because he's had some big games in the past. I remember one of his rookie year, he scored 30 against the Suns. I think him and
would you be more surprised to see in Moutier's next game a 0.8 turnover effort or another one like what we just saw? I mean, he's been so up and down that I'm ready for more valleys, but these peaks at least give me hope that maybe there's something that can. He seems like he's a part of what we've got going on.
Right. Yeah. Jeremy, what do you think it is about Moutier that's different this year? I mean, what have you noticed that he's doing differently that's made him just basically be a better player all around?
Yeah, I don't think it's any of the big steps that anybody wanted to see out of him. I don't think any of his glaring weaknesses really have improved, if maybe slightly. I think with him, it's been a, he's been working on the other things, the auxiliary things, and that's starting to add up. If as a point guard, you're not the best guy in the world at running the court and assisting, dishing the ball out or whatever, but you've do everything else, well, then you're, Jason Kidd, Lonzo Ball, you're still an effective player. And right. So what we saw from his first season, there was between his first season and his second season, one glaring improvement, and that was at the free throw line. He was at 67% his rookie year, which you can't be for a point guard. You just can't do it. And then 78% the next year. And pretty much everything else was pretty much the same. It's like the guy didn't get better, but he got better at free throws. And now this year, he goes from 31% his first 2 years from the three-point line to 48% right now. It's not going to stay there, but even ending the season over 40% is a huge improvement. And so it's a matter – go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. So, you know, he's been working on these things that I think – are a little bit easier to work on. You know, if you just get a teacher, you're going to a gym in the off season, you know, you're just putting these things up, repetition, work on your form. When it comes to assisting in the middle of a heated game or driving to the rim in the middle of a group of the top athletes in the world, that's just going to take more time. And so I'm happy to see him getting these minutes, but I don't think we can expect him to take these huge jumps at this point. And then you throw in the fact that, again, he's only 21 and there's no point guards in this league worth anything under the age of 25, Kyrie at 25. Even Malcolm Brogdon, the rookie of the year last year, is actually 24 years old right now.
Right. Yeah. He's pretty old.
Can you imagine Moody in 3 years from now? I mean, come on.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, so I think there's a couple things that you can point to that he's doing somewhat better, which is mostly I think you see him finishing at the rim a lot more than we used to see. You know, he's getting those layups that he would just frustratingly miss in the past. He seems to be getting to fall, because the thing about Moutier is he's always been able to get to the rim really, really well. He just blows the layup every time, and it's been like one of the weirdest things that's been a weakness of his. But I think he's done a lot better there. And then, like you point out, Jeremy, I mean, the 3-point shooting is I don't think it's sustainable. Look, like you said, if he shoots over 40%, to me, I mean, that is going to be an incredible year for Emmanuel Moody, and an incredible improvement in an aspect of his game, because and something that makes him a viable player in the NBA. Because no matter what else you could do, I mean, guys have shown if you can shoot 40% from three, you will last a long time in the league. I mean, Kyle Korver's lasted 15 years now almost. I mean, how long did Mike Miller last in that? That was essentially all he was a guy who could shoot 40% past three. But
then even as a point guard, I think it's even more important to be able to do that. If you are trying to run some plays, if you have a threatening 3-point shot, that changes the way that they have to play you. And all of a sudden you're a lot more effective on pick and rolls. You're a lot more effective on DHOs. It opens a whole lot more of the court up for you to be able to do something with it. And that might be one of these keys that Moutier is able to turn, that all of a sudden, you know, just by working on his 3-point shot, all of a sudden he becomes better at assisting. I mean, he still has these huge blemishes that are so frustrating to watch, but, you know, slowly but surely, maybe.
Slowly but surely, right. Michael, what about you? What have you noticed about his game that you think is different this year?
You know, Adam Modis from our site wrote a great piece a few days ago about, you know, the three things that Emmanuel could do right now, basically to get his game better. I don't know if Emmanuel had some free time in between games, but you know, it looked like he read it a couple nights ago when he was playing, because he was doing a lot of those things about, you know, not getting too excited, not overextending himself, which has been a real habit, right? I mean, it's, you know, you see Moutier make three really solid, really open shots, and all of last season and even the first couple of games of this season, suddenly you immediately hear heat check, and I think, I know what that shot looked like. I didn't even have to be looking at the TV, you know, and either somebody draped on him or double covered or something and taken something dumb. It looks like he's starting to work those things out of his game, which I was starting to wonder if it was going to happen as long as some of that was going. But in the rest, Zach, it just seems like I don't think there's any big difference, aside from a huge leap forward in the 3-point stats, which I had not caught a hold of until Jeremy brought it up. But I think for me, it's more that it seems like as frustratingly inconsistent as he has been for the last 2+ seasons, he's finally starting to just get a little bit more consistent across the board. And I say that, and now he's going to do that, you know, 0.8 turnover game I just talked about, but he's getting more consistent. It's not like I don't expect any dogs, but I'm starting to at least finally get the feeling that Moutier can be a net positive down the road. And if all he is exactly what Jeremy's talking about, you know, a guy who can make sure that the floor stays stretched, especially for the second team with the style that we're going to keep playing and trying to keep on the floor at all times, and can just be a threat that you can't sag in on to collapse the rest of the floor and all the rest of that. He's certainly been a hell of a pickup in that regard.
Right. Yeah, I think it's almost like, you know, you hear this thing that the game is starting to slow down for him. You know, I think everything, he's feeling more comfortable playing within, like you're saying, playing within himself, running the offense. He's not putting so much pressure on himself, and that's making him more effective and more efficient overall as a basketball player. Jeremy, let me ask you this. A guy who's probably is putting too much on himself right now is Jamal Murray. At what point or how much more do you got to see out of Moutier before you start thinking, hey, maybe we should actually put Moutier back into the starting lineup?
I can't believe that I would see that big of a climb for Moutier that I would want to put him in there. I think to me it has to do more with Jamal Murray and his development. As a coach, you have your ideal of what you want the team to be, and then you have the reality of what maybe is best at the moment. I guess that's true for the man or the president too, or manager. Or I'm losing my terms here, but you know what they want is Jamal Murray to be a point guard. We know that, at least a point guard in a Jokic offense, whatever that is. But Murray had, you know, he started off pretty poorly, and the one thing he's good at is just chucking balls up, being a shooter, a scorer, not worrying about running these deep plays and things like that. So there's this back and forth between you can't burn Jamal Murray's passion and time and effectiveness out at the point position if it's not clicking so well. But do you want to completely abandon it at the same time? You know, probably not. So to me, it would come down to Jamal Murray just being so bad that he needs to continue on as a sixth man, which he would be great at, or purely as a scorer kind of off the bench. That's what it would cause Moutier to get there. I don't see Moutier just ripping the point guard position open this season.
Right. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. It would, like you said, Murray would have to be really, really play really, really poorly, or get, you know, a scenario where he gets injured and just Moutier plays really well while Murray is out, and then that kind of puts the forces in the Nuggets' hand to where they just kind of have to play him off the bench because of the way Moutier is playing. Something like that, I guess, could happen. But I think it's kind of like, I think like you're right that they're gonna ride with Murray, and they're gonna kind of see, be willing to wait and see what he can do, because he's definitely had some flashes this year, without a doubt, and last season. And then if it doesn't work out, you know, next season when Will Barton's contract is up, they might make that move and say, okay, we're going to go back to Moutier as a starting, because we kind of want Jamal to take that Will Barton role off the bench and be that scorer off the bench for us. That to me seems more likely.
Interesting.
Mike, what about you? What do you think? How what would it take for you to see Moutier get back into the starting lineup?
I almost exactly the same as what both of you are saying, but I mean, from my perspective, it's what it would take is overwhelming data, right? It would take. I mean, at this point in time, I look at what I've seen from both of these two young point guards. And what at least it seems that both of their long-term potential means. And I think, you know, to tack on to what Jeremy was saying with a slightly different tangent, you don't want to burn Murray out if you're just, you know, banging his head against the wall trying to get something to work that's not going to work. But by the same token, everything about Murray that makes him good is about reps and time and making sure that he gets those pieces together to have enough time on the court to figure it out. He's fearless. He loves going up against and you know, Malone brought this up at the end of the game the other night, but Murray has gone up against some pretty crazy point guards to start the season as the starting guard at his age, right? So some of his suffering is just in the fact that he's hit some of the best so far, and I still see him as having more long-term potential in total than Moutier. So until it hits a point several games down the road where you finally start to go, wow, it just looks better when Moutier's in with that group, it would take something pretty drastic for me to consider doing that.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I think we all are kind of in the same spot there. All right, we got a few minutes left, so let's get into the Orlando Magic, who are coming in tonight. The Nuggets are going to wrap up their homestand here against Orlando tonight. They are the Magic. Meanwhile, they're coming off they beat the Suns last night, so they are coming off of the back to back, getting in from Phoenix. So not that long of a flight from Phoenix to Denver. But still, it sets up for the Nuggets, obviously, to have the advantage. Mike, I'll kick it back to you. The Magic they're 8-4 now. They're actually tops of their division. How much should we believe in this team? Because I mean, they haven't made the playoffs in some time. So, are you buying this hot start from the Magic? Are they for real?
I mean, you at least look at the games they've played thus far. They sure look it, right? It's most of these wins have not been them squeaking by or getting a lot of lucky calls or anything like that. I mean, they're decisively taking it to the teams that they're playing against. They're playing a pretty cohesive game together. Seems like they've figured out how they like a lot of these pieces to click against one another, and so. Yeah, I buy it. I buy it in the East, to be right. Fair. They're, you know, they don't have the same competition over there right at the moment that we've got on our side, but they certainly have played really well up until this point, and I expect them to give us a hell of a game tonight because you know, there's a couple of former Nuggets on the team. There's a bunch of those guys that tend to play with a chip on their shoulders anyway. And hey, you know, 8-4, winning against some good teams and even some not so good teams like Phoenix last night, it builds up some confidence. They're feeling it, and they're gonna come at us pretty hard.
Right. Yep. Exactly. I think you probably, funny point there. The ex Nuggets. In fact, two Nuggets who were traded for each other, and Aaron Aflalo and Evan Fournier. I like where the Magic are at. They are a young team, but they've got a lot. I like a lot of their pieces. I really like Fournier. I thought he was a great player here for the Nuggets. It was not one of Tim Connelly's better trades when he traded Fournier for Aflalo back in, oh, what was it, like 2013. Aaron Gordon, of course, everybody knows about. But Aaron Gordon has expanded his game to the point where he's not just a guy who's just kind of a dunker. He was kind of one of those tweeners, athletic tweener forwards that you always see come out of the drafts, and a lot of times they don't do well. I think of like a guy like Derek Williams comes to mind. Didn't end up panning out. But Gordon is able to expand his game. I mean, he's a good shooter. Decent rebounder, and he's made himself a very good player now in the NBA. And then Vucevic is playing really well from that center position. It's gonna be interesting to see how he plays against Jokic. Jeremy, let me ask you this. What do you think about, I mean, how do you see, how much similarities do you see here between the Nuggets and the Magic? Because they're both kind of these teams that are starting to maybe put some things together with their young core.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. They were a team that was like potentially of Brooklyn Nets' epic failure last season.
Right.
You know, like youngest GM, just everybody saying making all these mistakes. And it really is kind of weird. I mean, you trade Serge Ibaka, maybe the highest touted player on the team, and all of a sudden you're better. sometimes you just give these guys room to play and they can really grow. Like Aaron Gordon, I mean, I knew they had to have been better than their overall record last season. But you know, at this point, I don't know. And let me just say, I haven't watched a single Magic game this season, but my opinion is still extremely important here.
It's still an expert.
It's important to me.
But, you know, different play style and everything like that than what the Nuggets are doing. But the idea of a bunch of young guys kind of all coming up together at the same time. Elfrid Payton, again, probably just as criticized as Moutier. But again, he's 22, 23 or something like that. You know, I don't know. Interesting group. Different than the Nuggets. Interesting group, though.
Right. Yeah, like, I mean, they don't. I mean, Vucevic is a good center. Don't get me wrong, and he does a lot of really good things for this team. But they don't run their offense through him like the Nuggets obviously run theirs through Jokic. But there's right, exactly. But there's man, I don't know. Like I said, I like their roster. I mean, they got Jonathan Isaac too, who's a guy who I think a lot of people in Denver would have loved to have. On their team, they got. Yeah. I mean, they got some. They got some busts in there. They got Hezonja, who,
yeah.
I don't know. I was really high on Hezonja out of the draft. He's. I mean, he's been worse than Moutier has. And he was the same year of the draft, but
yeah,
pretty good. Pretty good core otherwise. All right, real quick, Mike. Who gets the win tonight? Or give me a score for the Nuggets and Magic.
I think the Nuggets are going to put up some points tonight, and take the game probably by anywhere from 6 to 12. So I'm going to say something like 120 to 110, somewhere in there.
All right. 120, 110. Jeremy, what about you? What do you got for a score?
Not too far off. I'd say Nuggets 112 to Magic 100.
All right, man, you guys. Not believers in the Magic. I think it's going to be a bit closer. I'm going to still give the Nuggets the win, but I'm going to go 101-99 on this one. All right. So Mike is at Visible Mike on Twitter. Jeremy is at Jeremy Poley. I am at Zach Mikosh. We are, of course, at Denver Stiffs. Also, follow us on Instagram at the Denver Stiffs, and then go head over to Facebook right after this. In about a half hour, we will be doing the Q&A live with you guys on Facebook while we also watch the Nuggets do their warm ups. So, if you haven't seen that, it's always fun. I always like doing Q&As with you guys. And then follow Nothing But Net Radio at NBN-Radio. Mike, Jeremy, appreciate you guys being on.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week.